Welcome to episode 3 of the Dean's Podcast, the podcast about issues shaping graduate studies in Canada. This podcast is brought to you by University Affairs Magazine. My name is Carolyn Waters, and I'm the Dean of Graduate Studies at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm also the president of the Canadian Association of Graduate Studies, CAGS, for the year 2009. Every month, you can listen in as I talk to other deans, faculty, postdocs, and graduate students about where graduate studies is going in Canada and internationally. In this episode, I talk to Gary Slater, Dean of Graduate Studies at the University of Ottawa. Together, we discuss challenges facing his faculty, including language issues, funding, recruitment, and postdoctoral training. You may also want to listen in on our second conversation when Gary deals with these and other topics in French. So today I'm in Ottawa, and I have Gary Slater, the Dean of Graduate Studies at the University of Ottawa. Tell me about your big challenges in Ottawa in a bilingual university for grad studies.
Oh, well, one of the challenges of the University of Ottawa in Canada, and especially the Ottawa region, is that many Francophones think we're mostly an English university, and lots of Anglophones think we're mostly a French university. So we have to change that perspective, and this is really a university where you can study in both languages or the language of your choice. It's a perfect opportunity to practice your second language. And now in a world of globalization, learning more than one language is obviously an asset. This is also the city where you have the embassies, lots of international organization, and of course the Parliament of Canada and the government organization. So that's one of our challenges as a bilingual university. A second challenge, of course, is that in some disciplines, language does matter in terms of the sort of thing that you do in your discipline. Literature, for example, there's schools of thought that are different in the English world and the French world in political science and sociology. In other disciplines, English has now become the language to work, science, engineering, for example. So in these cases, it's also a challenge. Because the Francophone student who wants to study in French, we have to deal with that sort of thing as well. So I think overall we manage very well, and the students benefit a lot from the special nature of this university. But it's a challenge for us every single day. We now have a permanent commission studying the language issue on campus and making sure that it's fair, that we develop the programs in both languages as much as we can, and that we have in place the services for both communities, and that we offer, in fact, the possibility to students to learn the other language and get better in the second language, or third or fourth language very often now, right?
Oh, second for me. At the graduate level, what proportion of students do you have who are primarily in French-speaking programs versus the English-speaking?
It's about the same now, master, PhD, and the undergraduate program. It's between 30 and 32, 33% are Francophones, and the rest are... Well, not necessarily Anglophones, but their main language is English at the university. English could be their second or third language, but they don't speak French. So it's about 32% Francophones.
Same at the PhD level?
It's roughly the same. It doesn't mean they are in Francophone programs, but their native language, the language of correspondence, as we say in university, on university campuses, is French. This is the language they declare as being their correspondence.
So at the PhD level, what proportion are studying in French? Or English, whatever.
Yes. Well, that all depends how you define studying in French.
Well, let's say writing their thesis in French.
We don't have data on this.
Oh.
You see, I'm myself a Francophone, in spite of my name, most of my own graduate students are I'm a physicist are Francophones. Physics is a science, and it's mostly English. So my students are supervised in French, of course. We work in French in my group most of the time, but they write their articles in English, like pretty much every other scientist, even in China or Russia these days. And their final thesis is a thesis by article. So except for the introduction and the conclusion, which are very often in French, the core of the thesis is entirely in English. So how do you define a program like that, where you take three or four courses in English, you're supervised in French for 4 or 5 years, and your thesis is half and half, more or less?
I call that Canadian.
That could be Canadian. So that's why it's very difficult to define how many are doing a program in French or in English. In some programs here, the Anglophones must do at least one course in French, for example. So it is a little bit of a mixed bag. Of course, French literature and English literature, they're unilingual programs. In some other programs, you can do your program entirely in French or entirely in English. And in some programs, in fact, we have decided that we would offer only the French version and never the English version, at least until now. For example, physiotherapy, it's a professional master's degree, and it's offered only in French at this time. So there's a mixture.
So is this a niche market?
Well, this is the only university that can train the health professionals in French in Ontario. You know, there's between 400,000 or 500,000Francophones in Ontario, Franco-Ontarians. So we need medical doctors, we need nurses, we need physiotherapists, ergotherapists, and so on and so forth. So it's our duty, the only bilingual university with a medical school in Ontario, to train the health professionals for our Francophone population. So we do have to do that, right? I mean, it's our mission. That's our duty.
Okay, so what's your big problem other than language? Funding, appeals, supervision.
I wouldn't say language is a problem. Language is
an advantage, opportunity.
It's an opportunity. It's a challenge. Okay, well, the biggest challenges for us is, of course, funding. It's not an easy situation right now, anywhere in North America or probably in the world.
Do you guarantee PhD students a stipend?
Yes, we do guarantee all Canadian students, PhD students with a GPA or an entrance mark of 80% and above, we guarantee. We also have a guarantee for a large subset of the master's programs. So that's a challenge, of course. The financial situation right now is not bad at the University of Ottawa. It's actually pretty good. The main challenge really is a provincial one. We have ceilings. So if we have more than a certain number of master's degree or PhD degrees, we don't get any funding from the government. We cannot exceed a certain number of students. The demand is there to exceed that. In fact, it's very likely that we will go through our ceiling. We will exceed the number of PhD students we're allowed to have next year. So if we do that, well, that means we have the students and we get no funding from the government, which means we're in the red as far as these kind of students are concerned.
So is there a strategic plan on campus to keep the numbers down or to figure out how to make it pay?
We're thinking about this right now. Because you realize, especially at the PhD level, if we restrict the number of students to those numbers fixed by the government, well, we also restrict our research activities.
Which is what the government wants, I might add. I mean, they don't want it restricted.
They want more. They don't want more. They want more research, but in a certain sense, they're not willing to pay for those expenses. And in this case, it's training highly qualified personnel, PhD students, the most qualified people in our society. So that's one issue. A second issue that we have everywhere in North America is the fact that North American people don't want to do science and engineering anymore. So recruitment of Canadian students in the science and engineering program is a challenge. It's a challenge everywhere. In this province, the government is not funding universities for international students. So you can see that if we take too many international students, so to speak, in the sciences, we'll lose a lot of money. Of course, we do have international students. We want to have international students, but the funding is a major issue because of provincial policies, essentially. But it's very, very hard to run faculties of science and engineering, and in fact medicine as well, with only Canadian students. It's a fact of life in our society. It's a very unfortunate thing. We have to work on this at the high school level. But currently it is difficult. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about postdocs? You have postdocs here?
Oh, yes. And in fact, it's I'm the Dean of the Faculty of Graduate and Postdoctoral Studies. We have been among the very first universities in Canada to change our names to make it clear that we have to take care of postdocs. They're a very important component of the campus. I think we have between 200 and 250 postdocs currently registered at the faculty. I don't think we have all of them right now at the faculty. But we do offer services. And as of, January this year, so 12 months now, we have a training program for postdocs. It has 5 units. So you can take 10 hours or more than 10 hours in each of them. But if you do 10 hours of training, you get a certificate of completion. So you can get 5 of those, obviously. And no surprise, one of the 5 units is on bilingualism. So you can have language training as a postdoc, but there's also career skills and that sort of thing. So we have 5 of those defined. And it's a very popular thing, in fact.
Now, does that go on the transcript?
No, it's only a certificate. There's no transcript. Postdocs are not...
You print something in the back room and they can frame it?
That's sort of that, yeah. No, it is a very important question. We're working on thin ice, in a sense, mm-hmm. because postdocs are not students, and they're not employees. They're right in between. They're trainees. So they're not taking courses as such. They don't have a transcript. But they're not independent researchers either. They're trainees. They're not employees of the university. So it's something we have to struggle with. And in fact, it's something that's creating sometimes problems with the with income tax reports and so on.
And how long do you consider somebody post-PhD to be a trainee?
Okay, so our definition of a postdoc is somebody who has received his or her PhD in the last 5 years, and we do not allow postdoc to be postdoc for more than 6 years. Of course, we take care of sick leaves and maternity leaves and so on and so forth, so we're very flexible for that. After 5 or 6 years as a postdoc, you have to graduate, so to speak.
Get a job is what it means.
You become automatically at this university a research associate, and in fact we have a minimum salary for postdocs and then a minimum salary for research associates. So after 6 years you change your title, and if you haven't already reached this minimum salary, your supervisor has to increase your salary to the minimum, which is, I think, currently $36,000 for research assets.
And what about benefits for the postdocs? Are they included in any benefits?
No, they have to pay. I mean, they can join the benefit programs of the professors at the University of Ottawa, but it's up to them. Some of them don't want because their spouse already have these benefits in another organization, so it's up to them to join or not join the benefit package of the university.
And are they a reasonably happy group here? Do they have an association or anything?
We do not have an association. We're hoping to have one, quite frankly. There is one association in the Faculty of Medicine, Postdoc Association, which is very active, actually. That's probably 80% of all the postdocs on campus, because we have so many research institutes, medical research institutes. The postdocs are not as united as the graduate student from that point of view. In medicine, there's a critical mass, number one, and generally their postdoc stay is longer. which means there's more unity, more cohesion within the group. In all the other disciplines, people are posed up for a year, sometimes two, and then they leave and they do, they find a job or they do another postdoc, but at another place. So it's very hard to regroup people and have a continuity in any organization. We have one of the associate dean of graduate studies here is in charge of postdocs, and he's working actively with the postdoc community, trying to form some kind of association. So we have somebody to talk to and meet on a regular basis and hear their concerns and what we can do to improve their situation.
This apparently is going on across the country, so I think we're going to be hearing a lot more. In fact, I think Sunny is organizing some kind of national meeting of postdocs in the spring, so I think you're the other group that has all the training, so we'll be there. So any final words for us, Gary?
No, I think that it's a great time to be a graduate student. Certainly, our society is changing. We have to change as a country. We're a rich country. However, we have to move from this mode where we use our natural resources, we sell them. We have to transform our natural resources. We have to transform the workforce. And this is not going to be done with people who have low degrees. Of course, it's clear that we need leaders in society, and these leaders will have PhDs and masters in the future. So we play an important role in our society. Society, Ontario and Canada, and the doors are open. It's a great time to be a grad student, in my opinion.
That's it for this episode. If you'd like to get in touch with me about something you heard on this podcast or about an issue that you'd like to see covered, please email me at carolyn.waters@dal.ca. You can also leave a comment at the bottom of the page where this podcast is posted at universityaffairs.ca. Until next time, I'm Carolyn Waters, and thanks for listening.